Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. 14 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we are delighted that you've decided to spend some of your day with us. We welcome you to share your thoughts. Write a note. Tell us what's on your mind. Panel at WAMC.org, and we'd love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll get to the letters in a few moments, but we have a lot to talk about. First, let me introduce the panel. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
And good morning to you, Big Joe.
Good to see you as always. Right next to you is Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's good to have you here.
Oh, we all love Jen.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
We all love Jen.
Yeah, we're worried today, and we're glad you're here. Thank you very much. Malcolm Nance is with us. He is a counterterrorism expert. He is an MSNBC correspondent. He is a commentator. He is a best-selling author, and he is a regular panelist, thank God, in this program. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. And look who's here. Corporate attorney Rich Honan joins us. Rich, for some reason, asked me to announce him last. I don't know why, but I'd...
Well, just going around the the table.
You say, why do I have you first? I should be last.
Well, I shouldn't be first. We all know that. Anyway, Rich, nice to be here.
Always nice to have you.
What
Thank
am
you very
I missing
much for
here?
Being here.
All right. No.
Early on,
no,
Rich,
I get it,
Rich
I get
looked
it.
At the script, and yeah. I had his name listed first, and he goes, why am I not at the end? And I said, I'll put you at the end.
I should not be first among this group.
All right.
Agreed.
Good. Well, good morning, and let's get to the topics at hand. And, man, there are a lot of them, so we'll talk. We will talk about the Iran deal, I promise. We talked about it yesterday. It's official now, and we will talk about it because we did a lot on it yesterday, but I do want to get to reaction and sort of the world reaction in a few moments. But the other story that I want to start with is the Michael Cohen story. The firm tied to a Russian oligarch made payments to Michael Cohen. This is a very complex...
Wait, that's the story we're starting with? We're not starting with North Korea. We're not starting with Gina Haspel. We're not starting with Iran. We're going to start with this?
Yeah, bribery. Let's go with it.
All right. Go ahead. Just registering my objection for the record.
If you're not watching this on video, you should see what Joe is looking at. How Joe is looking at Rich.
All right, sorry.
You don't see that as a big story.
It is a big story. I don't see it as bigger than the other stories, and the other stories are kind of linked by foreign policy.
I agree. Although, okay, here, Mister, I only show up on Wednesday. We've done
to you. That's Mister. I only show up on Wednesday.
But we've done North Korea, and that's what I said. We did the other story, the Iran deal, yesterday, and we'll go on. But we haven't talked about this one yet. Okay, here we go. A shell company that Michael Cohen used to pay hush money to a pornographic film actress received payments totaling more than $1 million from an American company linked to a Russian oligarch and several corporations with business before the Trump administration, according to documents and interviews. This from the New York Times. Financial reviews reviewed by the Times show that Mr. Cohen, President Trump's personal lawyer and longtime fixer, used the shell company, Essential Consultants LLC, for an array of business activities that went far beyond what was publicly known. Transactions adding up to at least $4.4 million flowed through Essential Consultants starting shortly before Mr. Trump was elected president and continuing to this January, according to those records. Among the previously unreported transactions were payments last year of about $500,000 from Columbus Nova, an investment firm in New York whose biggest client is a company controlled by Viktor Vekselberg, the Russian oligarch. A lawyer for Columbus Nova in a statement described the money as a consulting fee that had nothing to do with Vekselberg. Another transaction described in the financial records include hundreds of thousands of dollars Mr. Cohen received from Fortune 500 companies with business before the Trump administration, as well as smaller amounts that he paid for luxury expenses like a Mercedes-Benz and private club dates. Where did all this information come from? Well, enter Michael Avenatti. I haven't had enough press. I need more. Here I am. The lawyer for Stephanie Clifford, the adult film star known as Stormy Daniels, who was paid $130,000 by Essential Consultants to keep quiet about an alleged affair with Mr. Trump. The lawyer, a seven-page document titled Preliminary Report of Findings, does not explain the source of his information, but describes in detail dollar amounts and parties involved in the various dealings. And the Times, NBC, and the Post have all reviewed the financial records and have confirmed much of what was in Mr. Avenatti's report.
I say God bless Avenatti. I wouldn't make fun of him. I'll tell you the truth. He's
I don't make fun of him. I think he's great, but he's on. I don't know. He's on all eight networks at the same time. I don't know how he does that.
No, but he's good at that.
I think the word you're looking for is jihad. I mean, that is what he apparently is on for this president. He is representing his client to the nth degree,
and himself.
Look, he's a Harvard graduate, and he is out there. And bringing the case to a completely different level, another dimension altogether. And as I mentioned early on, this information that's been released, which Stormy Daniels is just indirectly involved, is now looking like there was a massive financial slush fund in which pay-to-play or bribery may be involved. By the way, bribery, that's in the Constitution. As an article of impeachment. Mm-hmm. So these are the things that are now at stake. We were way back when looking for the Russians having influenced this. We don't know whether Victor Vexelberg did this for his own personal reasons or was acting on behalf of the Kremlin. And when I went to bed last night, the amount of money was like $750,000 to $500,000 when I fell asleep during Rachel Maddow. And I woke up this morning and it was $4.4 million. Who knows how much money will end up in the slush fund?
And I think it's a matter of, you know, at the end of the day, can you prove that it's bribery quid pro quo?
Yeah, Joe Scarborough had a fascinating piece about that this morning, and he knows both Michael Cohen and Donald Trump personally. And he speculated strongly this morning that Donald Trump would not allow Michael Cohen to have any quantities of money like that collected in his name, that money would have to go to Donald Trump. And I mean, that's as clear as I've heard anybody speculate towards that we're just waiting to see whether this actually turns into a bribery case. But you know who knows? Right? Robert Mueller, the special counsel. He's probably known about this for months and months, especially back when he subpoenaed Deutsche Bank's records, which are Trump's records.
Why did he not prosecute if this is all coming out of the Cohen investigation? Wasn't that the one that was handed off to the Southern District of New York? Isn't that the one that Mueller is not?
Oh, there's advancing? Multiple tentacles here.
I understand, but if this is all part of the grand scheme showing the elusive collusion, then
it's a great question. I was wondering about this last night of why you then take it away from the.
There's this thing called LAW, and the laws actually have to be met with some measure of precision in order to take it to an immediate prosecution.
Although we could have an indictment. My question. Let me be more clear. If Mueller was onto this, and the aegis of his authority is, the Russian collusion, and this is now we're saying this is more evidence of Russian collusion. If that's what you're saying, why would that not have been part of Mueller's investigative team? Why was it handed off to the U.S. attorney in the Southern District?
That's easy. Mueller's mandate was to carry out an investigation related to Russian interference with the Trump with the election, and quite possibly involving the Trump administration and its campaign.
Well, we're speculating.
However,
we don't know his mandate.
The
right?
actual mandate of the special counsel, as it was issued last June, was that he could investigate that and any other crime found within any part of his investigation. He's not allowed to turn a blind eye to crimes. But he can hand off the effort to the Southern District of New York.
I don't think he can. Rich, let me have a little turn here.
Go ahead.
The two things here is Mueller has to fight on a number of levels. One of them is he has to fight on the political level. You got a president of the United States who has predictably been saying that he may have to do something about Mueller and get rid of him. So he hands some of it off to the Southern District. That's very bright of him, in my opinion. But he also, as Malcolm just said, has many tentacles. He can keep some of it himself. He can give some of it to others. And you have a federal judge now, by the way, in the pocket of the Republicans, the Republican-appointed circuit judge, who is now saying, it looks like you're just trying to get Manafort to flip in order to make your case. So the whole thing here is that there's got to be a game played by Mueller of three-dimensional chess, and I think he's doing it brilliantly. Now I'm shutting up.
Jen, do you buy that?
Well, you know, I don't...
Because you have the same question as I do, right?
Well, I mean, even before that, I think just looking at the guy who's his name in this, you know, Vexelberg, he's someone we know who has already a vested interest in Trump. We know that he's made, you know, substantial campaign contributions to him in sums that, you know, are around the $1 million range. So, you know, I'd like to know, you know, as a journalist, a little bit more about what his interest is and why he wants to support this candidate and why it apparently now seems to that he's willing to support him so far that he's going to make additional contributions to this
shell company. So he's a foreign national who's made campaign contributions?
That remains to be seen. It's a trick question.
Well, my understanding is that if that's the case, that's not legal, right? You can't take contributions from foreign nationals, it's
been circulated out there, and I think that's something that, you know, if it's come up before, you know, months before, and in some cases years before, well, a year before. This case has come to light. You know, why hasn't that been, discussed? Mother Jones and a lot of other places have reported on this pretty openly.
Well, like we said a little earlier, this is part of Mueller's mandate. He will find this out. He is finding this out. We're only getting information on the farthest periphery. It's like Rachel Maddow said, if anybody tells you they know what's going on in the Mueller camp, they're lying to you. All right? These are the breadcrumbs that we're getting from the far fringes of this investigation. So you can be pretty sure, considering that he hired the Treasury's Financial Crimes Division Director and 16 other top-flight financial crimes lawyers, that they've known about this for months, if not a year, you know, or not a year, but for the greater part of his investigation. And now they are honing in on Michael Cohen from multiple directions. And it's not just that Michael Cohen may have run this slush fund. He may have run this slush fund. And as I like to educate you all when we talk about counterintelligence, the first thing we do when we suspect you have contact with a foreign intelligence agency or nation is we tear your money world apart. We go after every dime. I was behind on a car payment for 60 days, and I got hauled in, my clearance suspended, and the first thing they said was, we're going to make sure that you don't work for a foreign country. So just imagine what they're doing to Michael Cohen and Donald Trump with relations to the contacts in Russia. All of this may be part of a long-term intelligence operation or just an influence operation by the Kremlin or the oligarchs themselves. We don't know.
Well, back to Rich's very good question about is it an illegal? One of the things I want you guys to explain to the slowest in the room, meaning me, is that there are those two shell companies, right? There's the Columbia Group and the Columbia Group, which are giving the money. Interestingly, the first thing we heard today was that the president of that group this morning said there's no foreign influence.
Right. CNN just had an infographic up saying it was a purely an American group what they were calling
because
it.
Because that gets to your question, Rich, of how they're giving this money.
Well, my original question was still, if this truly has something to do with the original investigation, it would be improper for Mueller to have handed it off because Mueller has, however loosely defined, Mueller is supposed to have some restrictions on his ability to investigate. He then handed a part of this off to somebody who has no restrictions on ability to investigate, which would be the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District. Now you're saying it's going back into that investigation. Kind of seems like he stepped out. If this is true, he stepped out beyond the bounds of his authority, had somebody do some work, and now he's bringing it in. Or it could just be that it has nothing to do with the Russia investigation, which I think is much, much, much more likely.
Wow, that's a crazy leap. And I'll tell you why that's a crazy leap. Because you're saying that he hands off an investigation to the Southern District of New York. Southern District of New York finds financial impropriety, and lo and behold, there is a boatload of foreigners involved in that which may, in fact, be back in his original mandate. Well, the Southern District could always say, look, we really think that part of this is a counter-espionage component to it. We will just hand that back to the, you know, to the U.S. government under his remit. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Look, these are lawyers who are sworn to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, which means when they find a crime, they will be required to identify that crime, pass it off to the proper authority. And what I'm hearing from the other side is, this: you guys can't investigate this. This is not what you were originally sent out there to do. All I want to do is say, Whitewater, Monica Lewinsky's dress. Those two things weren't part of the original mandate for the special counsel for Bill Clinton, but they felt there were crimes found there, one of which was, the only thing of which was perjury in a deposition by the president. But here we have real, potential, serious, national security-breaking crimes here in which people may have been elements of an espionage operation to influence the United States to break our electoral system and to buy a president. If I was the lawyer involved in this, I would be throwing subpoenas left and right on the suspicion that this was happening.
All right. I have to pause everybody there. We have a break. When we come back, we'll continue. And I'm sure people have other things to say, and we'll get to that in just a second. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. And we have Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Malcolm Nance, Rich Honan. I'm Joe Donahue. Welcome to the program. Panel at WAMC.org is where we will accept letters, and Alan has some to share with us right now.
Okay. God bless the USA. Hello from America's hat. Anybody get that? America's hat?
I don't know. Do we know where it's from?
Quebec, Quebec.
Canada.
Oh, it's America's hat.
Apparently. Got it. Hello. Bonjour.
That would be Tuke, right?
Up here, we know when you folks elected the fabulous Trump, the USA would be leaving the world stage. We were thinking along the lines of a gradual exit, not a faced first dive into the orchestra pit. This sure is entertaining, Anna. Tell us that when there's a nuclear war, Anna. Okay, so let's see here. Rick, our very good friend, Chef Rick. Do you know, want to know what disgusts me? Good morning, panel. It's a beautiful day. Do you want to know what disgusts me? The Republicans in the House and Senate disgust me. Because with all of this skullduggery going on in the Trump administration, they're willing to close their eyes so they can jam through their desperate agenda to basically undo everything that has been passed in this country, going back to the New Deal. Can you imagine if a Democrat were president with those allegations flying around? Thanks for listening. Rick Orlando in Woodstock.
Yeah. Well, of course he's from Woodstock.
And you, Stephen, Rick. Steve says in Sorgates, dear esteemed panel and America, the other shoe has dropped again.
Oh, I thought he was going to say, dear esteemed panel and Rich.
his title is Oy Vey.
Okay.
The other shoe has dropped again. What are our elected officials left and right waiting for? Good Lord.
All right.
Let's see. Robert says, according to the New York Times, Iran is currently dealing with a 5-year drought that has destroyed their rural economy, political warfare between the hardliners and moderates, and a financial crisis that is inflation soaring, the value of their currency collapsing, and major unemployment, particularly among large and restless under 25 sector of their population. Well, I doubt that Trump took any of these factors into consideration besides deciding to walk away from the deal. Maybe this isn't the worst time for the U.S. to be ratcheting up the pressure on Iran to rein in its non-nuclear bad behavior through the region.
No, but I think it's an awesome time, given all of those factors, to make sure that the hardliners take over government, restart the nuclear program, have a more aggressive posture throughout the Middle East and South Asia, and confront the United States. And all of those young men, 50% of the population that's under like age 35 or something like that, they will all rally around their country. They will not suddenly say, you know what, let's go all go to the flower of democracy as it is led by Donald Trump. That is really the most short-sighted thing that has happened here since, I don't know, the invasion of Iraq. And it's going to have bad consequences.
Anybody else? Okay. Michael says, defective to its core. Trump described the Iran deal as defective to its core. I say it takes one to know one.
Well, it wasn't defective. I wasn't here for yesterday's show, so let me, this is Malcolm, let me give a treatise on this.
Please.
When that deal was signed, Iran was 1 year from breaking out with a nuclear weapon. 1 year. The treaty pushed it back to where they had to give up 97% of their enrichable uranium, shut down, I believe, 70% and dismantle all of the centrifuges that can make weapons-grade plutonium, shut down a reactor that could make weapons-grade plutonium, and it pushed the potential cusp of them getting an atomic bomb 15 years into the future. Now they're going to go back to that one-year threshold, maybe 2 years, because they have dismantled a lot of things. If Rouhani, the moderate who is running that government right now, loses control, you are going to see trouble. You're going to see trouble on a scale that we haven't seen in a long time. And we don't have the capacity to fight and win a war with Iran, with the Israelis and with the Saudis, unless nukes are involved. So this is ridiculous. Mm. Trump wants to get rid of something because Obama did it. He doesn't think past his, well, he doesn't think at all. There you go.
Hmm.
Other than that, things are fine.
Well, what is interesting, though, is that the Iranian leadership seems to have indicated, we're not going to jump into this right away. We're going to give you some time to think this thing through, because they don't want to end up Saddam Hussein.
And they won't. They won't ever end up Saddam Hussein.
Okay, that's a verb.
There's no Gaddafi treaties for these guys. That's a country of 80 million people who are very intelligent. They have an enormous armed forces. They dwarfed Iraq, and they have the ability to make things unpleasant for us. But they also, with Rouhani taking this tack, they can work around sanctions. They'll just get everything from China, Russia, and
by extension,
Europe.
Well, that's exactly what they're doing right now, is securing those deals. And you have some of the leaders, you know, you don't have China or Russia weighing in right now, but you have everybody else stepping up and saying, you know, we're looking at what we can do. So that definitely has to be watched.
Well, we are definitely isolated. Iran did not violate the treaty. We violated the treaty. We withdrew ourselves from it. We have isolated.
Well, they had no obligations, so it's hard to violate a treaty of which you really have no obligations until you actually make a nuclear bomb.
The thing that boggles my mind with this whole case is that we were the ones who set them up into a nuclear pathway to begin with, and so.
You mean during the Shah era?
Well,
Eisenhower.
Yeah, I was going to say going back to Eisenhower. You know,
what was it called? Bombs.
Atoms for Peace.
Atoms for Peace.
Good for you.
We trained their folks at MIT, and it wasn't really until the Carter era that things changed when the Iran students, stormed the embassy.
There was an Islamic revolution under Ayatollah Khomeini. Right. Yeah. That changed
things.
It was
that little thing.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, we do have a vested stake because we led them there in a lot of ways to, you know, really be, I think it's prudent to be a part of that knowledge and to be a part of it versus, you know, just saying we're going to create a better deal for ourselves when, you know, there's a lot of questions about our own capacity to be over there to hold those sanctions accountable as well.
Well, there's no better deal here. Mm-hmm. And whatever Trump is thinking, it's clear that he's not thinking. They want regime change. And I mean, Giuliani was out speaking before a group that was supporting the Mujahideen al-Khalq, which was Saddam Hussein's Iranian terrorist group, which I carried out collection operations on for 15 freaking years because they were a terrorist group.
What do you mean collection operations?
Well, whatever I do in the intelligence community. So, you know, but we knew the MEK was a terrorist group until the invasion of Iraq. Then all of the conservatives rallied around them and were trying to use them as this sort of like Sandinista corps to send back into Iran to use against the government. I mean, we got to get out of that game. And Giuliani went before them and said regime change is what the United States government position is in Iran. You have just solidified every horrible thought that they've had since 1979 about the United States and what we intend to do. And Iran is not the kind of nation that you can just push around on their own territory anymore. They've spent 30 years arming up with anti-ship missiles, surface-to-air missiles, and IEDs, some of which they practically invented in Iraq. You will give Iran for everywhere from the Golan Heights, or sorry, Beirut, because their subordinate organization, Hezbollah, just won big in the Lebanese parliamentary elections the other day. Mm-hmm. It will be an Iran crescent from Beirut all the way out to the Pakistan border near Baluchistan.
Did you want to say something else?
No.
No, Jen?
Oh, no.
Did I step on you? Okay, John says, Iran agreement, let's not be deluded that anything thoughtful is going on here. The principal and maybe only motivation behind this and all of Trump's decision is to deconstruct every one of Obama's. The pattern is obvious. Personal animus, if not outright racism in this regard, is his basic policy. We should not waste our time looking for anything more thoughtful behind what Trump does. And that's from John from Half Moon. Let's see here. Tim in Stockbridge said, yesterday I wrote wondering why Trump would break the Iran pact since I didn't see how it benefited him financially, the reason he does everything. Now I figured it out. Pulling out of the Iran deal helps his dear friend Vladimir Putin. U.S. leaving the deal allows Russia and China to step in and play the role of adult. By the way, I'm not sure Trump is being blackmailed or not, but I do believe he's trying to lay the groundwork for his post-presidency. Putin is widely believed to be the wealthiest man in the world. Trump worships money and wants a piece of Putin. Tim in Stockbridge.
Oil prices just jumped in Europe this morning. Mm-hmm.
And in the States.
And it hits Europe far harder.
Yeah.
Oil is going to skyrocket on this. And because the potential, you know, if there is any small confrontation in the Strait of Hormuz, anywhere around there where Iran can say, you keep playing with us, we're going to shut down oil coming out of there. Mm-hmm. Prices will go through the ceiling. This benefits Saudi Arabia. And
absolutely.
If I'm not mistaken,
in Israel.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. because the guy with the orb over there, you know, Donald Trump went over there and cut deals and was seduced by their lavish expenditures. And he now is going to do their bidding. And based on the way that Jared Kushner bought them intelligence about people who were withholding their taxes and all the rest of that, you know, Prince Salman is on the cusp of getting oil to, if this continues, to $100 a barrel, which would be awesome for them because the Saudi economy has been faltering and they're sort of behind in their payments to the young there, mm-hmm. because oil prices went so low and they didn't manage to kick the United States out of the oil business the way they thought they would.
All
this
right,
is not a good circle of logic here.
We have to take a break. When we come back, Alan do you have one more letter?
One more, very quickly.
Yeah, go do that.
Dear panel, I admire Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' attorney. He recognizes his once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and he is 100% all in. Go for it. Stormy Daniels knows how to choose effective representation. That's for sure. Richard.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Malcolm Nance, and Rich Honan. Rich, what do you want to talk about now? You tell me. What do you want to talk about?
Are we on Iran? Are we on?
Do you want to talk?
Are we done with Iran now?
Do you want to do Gina Haspel?
Sure.
Okay. Well, you mentioned that. That was one in your litany. What would you rather talk about?
My litany was that I felt like the Iran deal.
We should mention the release of the prisoners in North Korea. Correct.
Mm-hmm. If you want, sure.
you're hard this morning, man.
I'm just saying. If we're going to talk about the Iran deal, the Haspel confirmation, the Pompeo's visit to North Korea.
Yes.
I mean, they're
mm-hmm.
all part of. To me, they're all part of kind of a foreign policy, you know, mm-hmm. story.
All right. So we'll get to Pompeo. But let us quickly say three Americans are released from North Korea, according to the president. North Korea released the American detainees ahead of the president's prepared meeting with Kim Jong Un. Delivering a diplomatic victory to Mr. Trump, the release was in some ways the most tangible gesture of sincerity shown by North Korea's leader to improve relations with the U.S. This comes as during the announcement of leaving the Iran deal, mm-hmm. the president said that Mike Pompeo was on his way to North Korea. He is now in North Korea and is working on the both this, was working on the release, but also on the actual setup of the meeting that is taking place.
According to the cables this morning, it's both confirmed. Have been accomplished.
Yes.
Right. He's bringing back the guys and he's...
But I don't think they've announced the date and time, right?
No.
They just say that they've been secured and set.
Yes, right. Yeah. But we don't know where and when. Okay.
No, you say the date and time of the Joe's of the meeting. They haven't confirmed the date and time of the meeting yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct.
And they're actually on their way. The hostages,
are on their way back. Right. Yeah. Did you want to add something to that?
No, I mean, which is good. I mean, obviously it's good. But you know, the real story is on that one is, you know, trying to get this meeting. And then the real story is, does anything, you know, of any import, you know, however slight, you know, come out of the meeting? And I think part of the if you guys can actually defend the Iran deal, then we don't really have it. You know, there's too much of a gulf between, you know, our thinking to be able to address it. But
ouch.
I think that it doesn't. I'm just saying it's just
you want a nuke in a year. We want them in 15.
Yeah. First of all, that year breakout is the first time I've ever heard that. Second, if you're really gonna negotiate a deal, I don't know why you send somebody over from the Department of Energy instead of somebody from, I don't know, a military place. Third, I don't know why you didn't have anything involving ballistic missiles as part of the deal, forgetting human rights, because you guys seem to give up on human rights when it's something that's, you know, in your favor. But probably the biggest issue was, if you're going to make a nuclear bomb, do you think you're going to make it in a military facility, Malcolm, or are you going to make it in a civilian facility where everybody can see it, especially when your deal says we can't go looking at their military facilities? So if that's your defense. And the last thing I'll say on that go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I know once a quarter I have to come in here and educate you on intelligence matters. Place where I got my breakouts from is the same place that President Obama and President Trump got it from. I got it from the primary briefer from the Central Intelligence Agency, who has testified all of this before Congress, these exact same numbers. And you're worried about the Department of Energy handles all nuclear-related affairs for the United States government, including the acquisition, production of nuclear weapons before they're turned over to operational branches of the government, like the Air Force and the U.S.
So
Navy.
Energy does it.
Energy does everything. That's right. Rick Perry is responsible
for the
production.
Along with other agencies.
But the principal agency is the Department of Energy. Mm-hmm. All right? They build the atomic bombs
until they are handed off to the
operational users.
All right.
And another thing is that we have the capacity to detect a lot of things, including illicit nuclear weapons programs. As one person who was responsible for this out at Los Alamos had put it, he said, "We're still detecting nuclear materials that were exploding in World War II. We have sensitive systems that can determine cheating and things like that." So, you know, everybody's getting paranoid over what they thought was the core worst deal in history. 15 years pushed down the road as opposed to a year, I'll take that deal anytime. Because then you never know what'll happen. They may spontaneously regime change themselves and become a flowering democracy. You know, but right now they're a military theocracy of which we are now pushing them to acquire atomic bombs.
We had them at the table 3 years ago because the sanctions, which had been painstakingly constructed, it had finally...
That was in the Obama administration, was it?
It was Obama administration, yes, and I think previous administrations as well. I mean, over the course of years, finally brought them to the table and then paid. And by the way, who pays anybody up front in a deal? You hire somebody to come to your house to work on your house. You don't pay the guy up front, okay?
No, you pay him something.
Up front? The sanctions relief came right up front. They got $100 billion.
No, the sanctions relief was Iranian money that was sitting in banks under the control of the United States, which we had frozen.
Well, it's part of a whole compendium of frozen
assets. That's right.
Assets.
And if we had not returned that money, we were about to have a ruling that the United States would have owed almost 10 times the amount. So as soon as sanctions was relieved, all we did was turn the key and their money flowed back to them. Now, everybody gets tight gets wadded up over that ridiculous little bit of story. Because we're talking money here now and sanctions that could essentially run into the trillions. But let me tell you another little part. I lived in Abu Dhabi for the last 7 years before I moved back here to home. The Iranians' market is in the Middle East. They are not flying to Los Angeles to buy Gucci bags. They go to Dubai for that. Mm-hmm. So all of those thousands of boats that crossed the channel over there were not under the sanctions regime. All of the trade they did with China, not under the sanctions regime. Surface-to-air missiles
from
Russia,
not
under the sanctions regime.
But they didn't have the money to spend
while
the money was being sanctioned.
Oil.
Yes.
And as long as oil can go into a truck or on a barrel, Iran will always be a rich nation.
And it's still an economy the size of Maryland, okay? So it's not like it's the big economy in the Middle East.
It's an agrarian society, but you know what? Most educated people in South Asia. Also a country that, I mean, we have an entire history with Iran. So, you know, by trying to degrade them as a people is sort of ridiculous when they have the ability to make anything we do to them hurt. All right? Sanctions.
I don't know what
we
part
go
of
back
that you
to
got
that regime.
As, what
it's
part
just
of that was
lost.
Degrading them as a people? I was talking about.
You're talking about their economy. Look, California has the economy, the sixth largest economy in the world. That doesn't matter when it comes down to the fact that they can trade oil for all the food, Nutella, and weapons that they want.
Yeah, and when you see the amount of money that with that sanction, with what you call their money, what I call was money that they gave to them in form of sanctions relief, where did that go? The first couple of purchases were satellites and aircraft. The money that they spent that goes to Hezbollah, which I know is not always publicly reported, went from $200 million a year to $800 million a year in 17. God knows what it is now, and you could see where Hezbollah has now gone throughout the Middle East. And I think to bring it back, Joe, to your question on North Korea, I think part of this was to show North Korea that we're willing to talk with you. We are suspicious. We remain suspicious. But if you think you're going to get the kind of deal that Iran got with basically no ability to effectively verify what's going on, that's just not going to happen.
I mean,
the basic question was, if you were going to do a deal, a real deal with Iran, and really bring them into, and you were never going to be friends, but at least make you people who could work together, why would they have a nuclear program at all? Why would you not go through all this and still let them keep a nuclear program? They say it's for energy. Come on. We say the whole premise of the deal was flawed.
Well, okay, North Korea, go ahead.
North Korea has just proven to us why you have a nuclear weapons program, because it's the only thing that apparently got people like Donald Trump will understand and respect. And if this deal goes badly,
but Iran,
they will haul to get nuclear weapons.
You're right, and Iran used that effectively to get the deal that's what brought us to the table, and our sanctions is what brought them to the table. And we could have done a deal that would have given Iran everything they wanted had they gotten rid of the program. Same thing with North Korea. And by the way, if you think North Korea is a problem, a nuclear North Korea is child's play compared to a nuclear Iran. Okay? And you know that better than anybody. A nuclear Iran run by Islamic fundamentalists who would not have any compunction about using that if they think they are supposed to be, and who have an avowed.
It's statements like that is why you bring professional spies onto this program. That's ridiculous.
I love it.
If you're worried about that, then you need to worry about a nuclear Pakistan, which tomorrow morning could wake up to be.
I am worried about a nuclear Pakistan
with over 100 atomic bombs in its pocket.
What's ridiculous about fundamentalist countries? What's ridiculous?
What's ridiculous is that what you're going by is essentially bias based on American bigotry. All right, we have problems all around the world. Okay,
yes.
And North Korea is a far more deadly foe. Or considering they can hit the continental United States, and Iran couldn't possibly develop a weapon system to do that in another 20 years. North Korea has it today. So, focus, man, focus. That's what I would tell you if you're one of my watchstanders.
Yeah, well, I would tell you to focus on the fact that we're going to have more productive conversations with North Korea, I believe, in the next couple of weeks.
We should have brought popcorn, Jim. Then,
I hear you, but then I would send you outside to pick rocks.
Then those conversations that we had on the Iran deal that set us back this many years.
All right. All right. Let's take a break. We'll go over to Ray Graff and... this may be the first time I've said that. We'll send it over to Ray to calm things down a little bit, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. I'm Joe Donahue. Alan Chartok is here. Jen Smith, Malcolm Nance, and Rich Honan. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning.
Hey. Were you just dancing? I didn't catch if you were dancing, I didn't catch you.
Well, it was all flamenco-ish. So
you're like our own studio Ellen.
I was running out to the car to get my large hat to do the flamenco thing.
Yeah, always good. All right, we want to move on and go to some letters, and then we'll hit some other topics.
Can I just make one quick comment about
absolutely.
You know, back to the matter of the hostages. I think if I were Otto Wambier's family, I would be livid right now with what's going on, how brutally their son was treated. They're in the middle of a lawsuit. They're trying to sue North Korea for what they did. And then you have these reports of these other guys being released in good health. And it just becomes more apparent what, you know, political pawns these hostages were.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because another component in my past life was I ran the Tier 1 Special Operations Hostage Survival School. And what you have here is what we commonly refer to as hostile government detention. This is when a rogue regime or a state takes innocent people, holds them as hostages or in hostile government detention, always accuses them of being spies, to literally use them as leverage.
So is there any chance, Malcolm, that they were spies?
Probably zero. We don't run agents like that. And certainly in North Korea, it's just far more proficient. It's just better to use technical techniques and to let the South Koreans run agents.
Every time there's an election, though, there's this ultimate discussion of more assets on the ground, say the politician. We have to have more assets on the ground. So one would have to at least suspect we put spies into
North Korea.
We would put resources.
That's a tough nut.
Yeah. We would put resources into liaising with other countries who have better capacity. But my point is that these three people who are being released, two of whom were kidnapped last year or held in detention by a foreign government last year under Donald Trump, are being released because they were a leverage tool against the United States.
Yeah, and Trump is talking about what a wonderful man now Kim is, which is extraordinary. So if your point, Jen, about being furious would be very valid, I think, here. Can I read a couple, Joe, or not?
Yep.
Okay. This is from Christine, who says, I'm a member from Kingston. Some of us appreciate a, quote, adult film. Raise your level of consciousness, please. The women in the industry would appreciate it also, I think. And I hope this is important to you. Call Colbert on it as well. Thank you.
I don't know what that... What?
Well, she just won.
Let me see. What was the end?
Are you sure that wasn't a personal letter to you?
No. Okay. Well, she just wants better treatment of the people in that industry.
Call Colbert on it as well.
Oh, Colbert.
I heard
Cobra, and I was like, I didn't know about the Cobra.
I said Colbert, didn't I?
Sure.
See, I actually thought people had gone out of their way, no matter what side you are on, the Trump, Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen thing. I thought people, she's referred to as an actress or an adult film star, but I don't think anybody on either side has said the woman's somehow less credible or something because of her profession. I haven't heard that.
Dan Savage, the great sex columnist and podcaster. You know, he's always stands up for what he refers to as professional sex workers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in this circumstance, I think that's what the young lady was driving at, was to show some respect. But they're people, they're human, and she has identified a what could quite possibly be a new line of presidential impeachment in terms of this slush fund, which could ultimately end up to be a bribery fund. Mm-hmm. Good on her.
All right, DJ.
Anytime
says,
we quote Dan Savage on the radio, it's just he's my man. It's got to be a good Dan.
I never heard of him.
Be awesome.
Love his column. Great. He's been that Metroline paper.
Mm-hmm.
That Metrolimpia.
That Metrolimpia.
Okay.
Metrolimpia.
DJ says Malcolm and Rich. I love Wednesdays on the Roundtable. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool liberal. I want, in capital letters, to believe Malcolm in everything he says. Much to my dismay, I tend to agree with Rich. Thank you for your varied perspectives.
Good.
Now, see, that's an interesting comment. Yeah. I want to agree with Malcolm.
But I tend.
I find myself reading.
Well, he doesn't say he disagrees with Malcolm. He says he wants to agree with Malcolm in every way and in a few ways.
Well, don't we all?
But he's practicing some dynamic thinking.
Be skeptical in all matters. We literally have to smack this into the heads of our young intelligence trainees to not believe everything we tell you. Go look at the evidence and start, you know, applying what we call the least used intelligence tool, which is common sense.
We tell that to journalists, too.
I was going to say, I can't tell you how many times a day I say to our young associates, question the assumption. Question the assumption.
But don't question authority, right?
Jeff says, Putin is smiling because of his investment in America is paying off. Trump has essentially split NATO over Iran, Russian ally. First cracks in the alliance, Putin is loving it. And Harleen says, Harleen, oil and Russia. Half price of oil will enormously benefit. Oh, no, excuse me. High price of oil will enormously benefit Russia. You know, I've always felt that these gas companies will raise the rates every time they have an opportunity to do so.
I agree with you. And not only do they raise it, but the speed at which they raise gas prices, based on, I mean, something's just over the wire, and next thing you know, gas goes up 5 cents.
They've been trying to get us into, you know, boiling the frog. A couple of years ago, they were almost successful at it, getting us to $4 a gallon. And, you know, they actually have said in testimony that they should be charging $6 a gallon, which is Europe's rate for gasoline.
Right.
And I think, you know, if they could jump on this deal to work our way up this summer, I think oil industry executives would do it.
I learn something from you every time you're on.
You know, if Judith Henke was here, I think something that she might agree with also is $100 a barrel for oil is kind of the tipping point at which people get really serious about alternative fuel, an alternative, you know, energy. And just as somebody who does investments and things like that, $60, $70 a barrel, there's a lot less kind of venture capital money flowing into alternative energy. But when that number gets up to 100, all of a sudden people start
looking selling a lot of Priuses this week.
Osama bin Laden said that oil for Saudi Arabia should be sold at $140 a barrel. Mm-hmm. And at one point in the Bush administration, it struck 140 when oil was at its peak. When a terrorist leader tells you what would be good for him, you might want to rethink your energy usage.
Moving right along, get ready for $5 gas by this fall as oil goes over $100 a barrel. Maybe oil companies wanted this all along. Janos in Great Barrington. And Jeannie says, Mueller has another political problem. He has to watch out for Congress, too. According to the Dallas Morning News, Russian proxies gave millions of dollars to the GOP last election, including Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham.
A whole chapter on it in my new book.
Right. Yeah. No, I get it.
It's real.
And Roger says, Trump and Iran. Good morning, panel. The proposed breaking of the Iranian nuclear deal is the worst American foreign policy move since the invasion of Iraq. President Trump reveals his arrogance at its worst. There will be more, not less, regional instability and threatens the longstanding North American-European alliance. And it's much longer, but I think we've covered that territory already, and we got it.
We just want to take a quick moment to thank Malcolm for being here. He has to has to go off. It's like a Bob Hope appearance on The Tonight Show. I got to go.
All right.
He's got to go be on television. Malcolm, thank you very much. We'll see you very soon.
Bye-bye, guys.
Appreciate it. We'll go back to letters. Alan, go ahead.
Okay, so while we're taking a brief break, why don't we mention the lockbox got opened yesterday.
The lockbox?
A huge thing.
Oh, and I just got a total. I don't know if I have it right in front of me, but I got a total. But the lockbox is open and it's ready, and we need you desperately.
Because we're going to $500,000.
$500,000, and that's half of what we are looking for, and the fund drive officially begins June 4th, so it's just under a month. We always open the lockbox just about a month before the fund drive. That's what we did this time. And
Just do it.
WAMC.org. WAMC.org. And the more we have in there, the better. And it'll be good.
And Samantha says, Hi, y'all.
Hi, y'all.
Love the show. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Mueller hand the initial Cohen investigation off to another entity, complete with a neutral taint team, in order to ensure that his people did not come in contact with information outside their purview? Was he not trying to maintain as much impartiality as possible until, parentheses, and only if, such discoveries might be made that warranted his team's full participation? That's how I understand the progress of this particular piece of the puzzle. Thanks for the clarification. Any clarification you guys can give? Well, we did talk about that at some length earlier. Tristan says, why not Iran? Good morning, panel. Can someone in the panel explain why our country backs Saudi and other Sunni states' interest in the Middle East over those of Iran and other Shia groups? Okay, anybody got an answer on that one?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, I think it ties back to our longtime allyship with that. And so it's Saudis, the vested interest, obviously, money. And, you know, we just gave them a lot of funding. So I think that's the basic answer, but it's more complex thing.
I think if the State Department went here, they would say, you know, we try and get along with everyone we can. It's just that the whole state sponsored of terrorism thing by Iran, you know, makes it a little more difficult for us.
And Raphael concludes his letter saying, if we could bring a working relationship with Iran, wouldn't they be able to help us defend against the extremist Sunni groups that have sponsored so many terrorist attacks throughout the world? And then Roger says, please inform Malcolm that the Iran deal was not a treaty because Obama could not get it through the Senate. Well, there is that. He did it on his own, and nevertheless, he was the president of the United States. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He joined all these countries around the world in doing it. And it does threaten the idea that when the United States gives its word, that it doesn't keep it.
But, well, first of all, I don't think Malcolm said it was a treaty, so I want to defend Malcolm on that. I think it was a deal. I don't think Malcolm said necessarily it was a treaty. But it was not the word of the United States, and that's the important thing. I think John Kerry made the same mistake, which kind of boggles the mind since he was Secretary of State. It was not, if it was a treaty and it was approved by Congress, then yes, it would have been the word of the United States.
I knew you were going to say that.
Well, only because it's correct.
No. Trump doesn't think Bolton does. No. Hi, panel. Don't forget about the new kid on the block, John Bolton. If you want to understand this decision, just ask yourself, how can we escalate conflict with the Middle East? The answer to that question will become the U.S. foreign policy as long as Bolton and the other hawks are at the wheel. Thanks, and that's Tim from Chicopee. And thanks for the show, says Norm. A different general topic. Why is Trump allowed to spend my tax dollars to fly to address partisan political rallies and weekend golf outings? We are funding his propaganda campaign, his early reelection efforts, and his bad golf. It's got to be millions. It's just not right. Good show. Norm from Clifton Park.
Norm thanks. Is so correct on that.
Thanks, Norm.
Thanks, Norm. But he's so correct. And, of course, I have to say it's not just Trump. Mm-hmm. It's all of them. But I think the idea is, you know, they say there is a governmental aspect to the trip,
right,
and then suddenly, you know, suddenly it's okay. But the amount of time and money that presidents, and I'll say other elected officials, spend on our dime running for office, it's just awful.
And then now I think looking at litigation cost alone, how much of our taxpayer dollars are going to that instead of things, I cover education again, you know, getting fair teacher contracts, you know, getting school resources, things like resources for any sort of public program and well-being are being diverged by other interests.
And executive. So if you were attorney general, if somebody elected, I'm talking to Jen, if you were elected attorney general tomorrow, would you walk in and go to both sides and say, I'm terminating all the investigations? I'm terminating this investigation. I'm terminating the allegedly ongoing Hillary investigation. I'm done with the investigations. We're just going to move forward with other stuff.
Start from scratch.
I'm talking on both sides, on all sides.
Well, are you advocating that?
I don't know. I'm just asking.
I don't think that would be ethical.
No,
because,
I understand.
You know, there's that much an investment in that. But, you know, I think it definitely is, you know, worth a strong review of what's going on.
Because now we're talking about they're talking about a second special prosecutor now to reinvestigate the Hillary stuff.
Well, and to look at, like, I think it's the review of resources.
Listen, Rich, you know very well that the Mueller investigation is far from over. that he's got all kinds of stuff, that he's indicted all kinds of people, and that people have pled guilty, and that to say, well, let's just get rid of it, is playing right into the Trumpian hands. That's what it is.
I think the special prosecutor law is something whose time has actually come and gone. I don't think the nation has ever benefited from.
Well, we don't really have one. That's the problem.
The use of it. I would defy you to tell me when's the last time the nation really truly benefited from
prosecutor.
Okay,
you asked the question, you got an answer.
Okay, yeah.
Right the hell now. We need a guy who is, in my opinion, showing signs of being a crook, and therefore. Of course, we need to have an investigation going on. Well, I mean, there's so much here, and it's so rich. And the stuff about Hillary, I mean, for goodness sakes, that's all nonsense. This is where we are going. We're there now. And the idea to say, let's stop the Hillary investigation, and at the same time, let's stop the other investigation that Mueller is doing, that's just nonsense.
All right, we have about 2 minutes, so we will end with, we should mention the story about the West Virginia primary, a tight three-way primary in West Virginia, and those results, the Blankenship was the guy's name.
Yeah, Trumpier than Trump,
and he did not win. People hated the call from the president, and that was not an issue. But other takeaways: Republicans averted a worst case scenario, the nomination of Mr. Blankenship, but faced warning signs, and the
huge numbers of Democrats. I'm sorry to interrupt, Joe, but huge numbers of Democrats came out to their primary. As opposed to the number of Republicans
in West Virginia,
total who
yeah, but you
out.
See how many didn't vote for Joe Manchin. I mean, I know he got 60% or 60%.
I think it's important to look in the context of Indiana, what's happening in Ohio, and in addition to West Virginia as well. But I think you know, there's an interesting conversation even on NPR this morning about, you know, what does this mean? What are voters saying with the decisions that were made?
And just that idea that voters. Talking about Congress, but anyone who was in Congress and was seeking a higher office got wiped out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, like, okay, done. Yeah, right. we're done with you. Not good. That was the case in West Virginia and mm-hmm. in Ohio, and as well as in Indiana. So.
Absolutely.
But it's all good, right? High turnouts, lots of publicity. I mean, mm-hmm. these are all good things, right? I mean, we want people to be involved and
yeah,
be
absolutely.
Aware.
I think, but again, it's just, I think the bigger issue, and I mean, we've talked about it a lot on Wednesdays, is just what are we doing to for voter security, equity, and protecting the polls moving forward. I think I think that's even the bigger issue of, you know, who's running for office is, you know, making sure that there's fair counts in elections coming ahead.
And we should note that that women in office also prevailed yesterday, found success in the early primaries. 19 open house Democratic primaries had at least one female candidate, and a woman won in 16 of them. So pretty impressive there as well.
We'll take it.
We are. That's right. We'll take what we can get.
We'll take it.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Thanks to Malcolm, who already left. Thanks to Rich, who's still here. And Jen, thank you. Alan, thank you. We'll see you all. We'll see you tomorrow, and we'll be back for another panel. Tomorrow morning, don't forget the lockbox, WAMC.org, and we'll continue with more show after this.